So we're
Thank
good?
You. I think so.
Okay.
Keep our fingers crossed.
Mr. Kinnick, we want to get you on film. We waited for a while to get you up here.
Yeah, I figured that much. Thank you. My name is William Kinnick. I live in Seaford, Delaware. I'm a representative of Delaware Manufactured Housing Association. I came here for two reasons. One is to thank the council for their $1,500 grant. We've used that grant, and it's going to be demonstrated on this next month at our first seminar of the year, and you're cordially invited to attend. It's on April 15th. It's at the United Methodist Church, and the doors open at 9 and it kicks off at 9:30. Coffee and donuts will be provided. The second reason I'm here is I know you as a council know that we have sewer problems in Sussex County. We have water problems in Sussex County. There's not much you can do with that part. But when we start leaking into the Nanticoke River, infecting our environment, we need your support to ask your representatives at the state level to help us get DENREC under control. They are not responding to anything at the moment. They're like hiding in a closet. So I asked that you reach out to your representatives and state senators to see if they can help us move DENREC forward to get things done. We already have the Environmental Protection Agency in here at the federal level, and they've already fined the landowner over in Seaford area $125,000, but a fine doesn't stop the leaking into the Nanticoke River or into our aquifer. So I ask you, please help us, help our environment, and help the safety of our people. Thank you.
Thanks, sir. Operator, check online, please, anybody that wants to speak to public hearing or public comment.
If there is anyone on the line who would like to make public comment, please dial 5-star. At this time, there is no one on the line to make a public comment.
Thank you. We'll close public comments. Moving on, Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. The next item of business today is a presentation by the Delaware Department of Transportation. We are joined today by Secretary Majestic and her staff, including Shantae Hastings, who are here to make a robust presentation related to activities here in Sussex County. Council, this is designed to be an interactive presentation, so certainly if you hear anything or have questions related to all the great work that DelDOT's doing in Sussex County, by all means, welcome to both of you, and thank you for your willingness to come down. I know you are extremely busy.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the invitation. As was stated, I'm Nicole Majeski, Secretary of the Delaware Department of Transportation, and I have Shantae Hastings, our Deputy Secretary and Chief Engineer, here with me today. We have a lot to go through because there is a lot happening in Sussex County, as you all know. So we do have quite the presentation that we will make available to you all that you can publish online for everybody to be able to see. So we'll go ahead and get started. So we start all of our presentations off with our mission to provide excellence in transportation, every trip, every mode, every dollar, and everyone. Unfortunately, the next slide is what we're also starting all of our presentations off with. We have been including this slide in every single presentation that we have done for the last year and a half. This is our roadway fatality chart. It gets updated every week, tracks the number of fatalities that we have on our roadways. So to date, we have had 31 fatalities, which is a decline from last year, thank goodness, because last year was the deadliest year that we've had on our roads. We actually tied for the deadliest year from 1988. We had 165 fatalities last year. Our serious injury crashes and fatalities continue to increase. We've seen a dramatic increase over the last 3 years. This is our chart that we track. So you see the different vehicle occupants, pedestrians, bicyclists, motorcyclists, and the different crash types. Our staff is analyzing every single crash to determine, are there things that we can do from an engineering standpoint to make things safer? Our strategic highway safety plan is our roadmap on our emphasis areas that we're working on, along with law enforcement, Office of Highway Safety, Safety and Homeland Security. So just some of the highlights that I wanted to touch on today from a safety standpoint. We obviously are working with law enforcement on enforcement, and so two enforcement efforts that we've launched over the last year. The number of tractor-trailer parking and illegal truck parking continues to increase along our roadways. So there was legislation that was passed last session to increase the enforcement of illegal tractor trailers that are parked along the side of the road. So we've identified a lot of safety corridors where we're able to put up the signage, then law enforcement can go out and give warnings and do citations to encourage the tractor trailers to park in other locations. But the other thing that we're doing in tandem is trying to identify additional truck parking so that truckers have a place to go and park safely. So we are gonna be looking at several of our park and ride facilities, our transit centers, anywhere that we can provide some safe access for truckers to be able to park overnight so that they're not on the side of the road, which then impedes a lot of site issues. The other thing that we piloted this last year was automated speed enforcement. We do not have the ability to do this in our state, but we asked the General Assembly through the bond bill to give us the authority to pilot it on our I-95 Restore the Corridor project that we had in Wilmington. We had a number of crashes and speeding that was occurring in that construction zone, and we needed to do everything we could. It was in a configuration where law enforcement could not pull people over because we contraflowed traffic on 95. We were able to put those two cameras in. We did an extensive warning period, and then citations were issued. But what we did see was a decrease in speeds by 12% and a decrease in accidents by 45% when the cameras were in on that work zone. So that was one of the pilots that we did, and again, that partnership with law enforcement.
I know, you had three fatalities in work zones.
Yes.
Was that on 95?
No.
So
no.
With all the construction, I'm sure you'll touch on this.
Yes, yeah. We will. Yeah. We are, again, the use of technology, one of the things, especially down here on the Route 24 corridor, we're doing smart work zones where we're installing technology to give drivers that advance warning so that there's the indication with message boards in advance of you entering into that work zone, slow traffic ahead, work zone ahead, lane shift ahead, that type of thing. So we're deploying more of that technology in order to give the drivers as much notification in order to keep those workers safe. So, yeah. But yes, the work zone safety, next month is National Work Zone Safety Awareness Month, and so we'll be talking about that that campaign statewide here very soon. From an engineering standpoint, you are all familiar with many of these initiatives that we have, the rapid flashing beacons for pedestrian access, our rumble strips. From a curve standpoint, because we've seen a number of curve departures when we look at those serious injuries and the fatalities, so doing the dynamic chevrons that light up on curves, the high friction surface treatment to give people more traction. Cable median barrier, this year we'll be continuing the installation of that cable median barrier on Route 1 from the Air Force Base to Barker's Landing, as well as on US 301 up in Newcastle County. And then a pilot that we've seen, unfortunately, last year we had 7 wrong way fatalities that took the lives of 13 individuals. 7, the most we've ever seen. So we have piloted new technology on Route 1 at the Dover Air Force Base on the ramp there. So as an individual, if someone were to go up the ramp the wrong way, we already have signage that is in place and striping. But as they enter that ramp the wrong way, everything starts flashing. And then our TMC, our Traffic Management Center, is notified that there is a wrong way driver that has entered the road. And then we can dispatch DSP. And we also start recording so we can monitor where the vehicle is going. While we were even, it was in the test phase, we actually, a vehicle went up the ramp the wrong way. And luckily, saw the notification, did a 3-point turn, and exited the road. But unfortunately, the wrong way driving accidents are, we've seen such an uptick in them over the last year, so we're piloting it now. If we're seeing success here, we're gonna be deploying this technology throughout the state. Shifting gears, from a resiliency sustainability standpoint, we are the lowest lying state in the nation, and as you all know, flooding becomes more and more a concern for us. We have more roads that are overtopped with water on sunny days than ever before. We have about 14,000 road segments that experience frequent flooding on a regular basis. The map that you see in the middle, our team has developed a frequently flooded area map that's interactive, that's on our website. We've identified these locations. So our goal is to be investing enough funding each year so that we can mitigate around 20 miles of this frequently flooded roadway each year. So those efforts are underway. We're using different technology. That's a picture of South Bowers, the access road into the South Bowers community. We're using different materials. It's a porous surface where the water actually kind of goes through the pavement and into the drainage system. If we're successful with this, we're piloting it here, that's some material that we're going to be able to use in other locations. So trying to be innovative as to the flooding concerns that we have throughout the state. We have our coastal corridors resiliency study that's underway along the Route 1 corridor, looking at that. So a lot of work from our resiliency and sustainability team. They are also tasked with the implementation of the electrification of our infrastructure. So through the bipartisan infrastructure law, the DOT specifically received formula funding for the installation of EV charging stations. And so we've submitted our plan to Federal Highways. It's gotten approval. These charging stations would be on our alternative fuel corridor, so your 95, 495, 113, 113 locations. And so we are partnering with the Denrec on the installation of those charging stations for that will happen this year.
They work. Are they like a vending machine where you use a credit card? And
yes. So we'll go out to RFP and we'll have a third party that will be the ones that will install them and then maintain and operate them. But yes, there will be some sort of charging mechanism. Not sure what that's going to look like yet. Right. And it will be stations that are adaptable to any electric vehicle.
I guess you've probably heard that there's been a lot of pushback against the EV mandate. Mm-hmm. So
yes,
stay tuned on that.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
And then I would be remiss if I did not talk about litter. So I think that trash has replaced snow this past winter because the uptick in the trash complaints that we have received has just skyrocketed throughout the state. Last year, our crews, along with our volunteers, Dr. Highway, we partner with Department of Corrections, picked up 59,000 bags of trash. Yes. On average this winter, our crews have been picking up 1,300 bags of trash a week. It has been an ongoing problem. It's one of the governor's biggest pet peeves. So our Keep DE Litter Free campaign, we are asking the public for their support, for one, to not litter, but then also to help us volunteer and to clean up our roadways. From a transit standpoint, we do have a lot going on. Our beach bus will be back in action starting on May 22nd. We've definitely seen ridership increase. So last year we had on average about 15,000 riders a week through the peak season. So we're excited to be bringing that back. We continue to deploy our all-electric buses into our fleet. So by the end of this year, we'll have 11% of our fixed route fleet will be all-electric, many of those buses being deployed down here in Sussex County. DART Connect is the pilot microtransit program that we started here in April of 2021. It's the on-demand transit service from Georgetown to Millsboro. We've seen great success with that. Over 30,000 trips have been generated through DART Connect, so we're really excited about the success that we've seen there, and we're going to be piloting a similar program up in Newark. So we're hopeful that this can be kind of the future of transit for us, and part of the DART Reimagined is us kind of taking a step back and looking how we are providing transit service throughout the state. The pandemic has shifted how people are riding transit. Our commuter ridership has changed. People's behaviors and habits have changed as far as what their needs are and getting around. And so we've hired a consultant to come in and kind of, again, look at our transit service and give recommendations on how we could be serving our customers better and expanding service, especially down here in Sussex County, expanding it onto the western side. So we're excited about this effort, but microtransit may be one of those tools that we have to be able to provide on-demand transit service for folks that a standard fixed route bus that does a circulation may not work because you may not have the ridership there throughout the day. So this is a great new alternative for folks. So our multimodal efforts, as you know, we've got a lot of investment that's happening down here in Sussex County from our bike trails, pathways program, sidewalks. So we're excited that all of these projects are in design. It's underway with construction that's scheduled to happen in the next over the next 2 years, I would say. We're especially the Georgetown to Lewis Trail. We have the remaining 6 miles of trail that's remaining. We've applied for a federal grant to be able to expedite the construction of that, but we're really excited about all the efforts here as soon as we have any segment that is complete, we have cyclists and pedestrians on them immediately. We've just seen such a great usage of the trails.
How about the Milton bike path connecting with the Lewis Georgetown path? Mm-hmm. Is there any talk of that?
Yeah, definitely planning efforts. We're not quite ready to kind of give an announcement, but we're definitely trying to plan for linking those two up because we understand the importance of trying to get folks kind of circulating to where they want to go to, and those are two important connections.
All right, so moving on to our partnership with you all from a land use standpoint. Obviously, Delaware is unique in that the state owns and maintains 90% of the roads, but then you all have the land use decision. So the partnership that we have with each other is vital for the success. So as development is coming online, we're ensuring that there's transportation improvements to be able to support it. We know from a business standpoint, because of that 90% ownership of the roadways, most developments have to come through us for approval. And so we understand the importance of having an expedited review, making sure, especially for those small businesses, redevelopment plans, that we're able to work through those in an expedited manner. So we have been meeting with the engineering community. We're getting feedback from them, always looking for ways to refine our process. But we have a lot of planning studies that are going on, so we'll go into a bit of those separately individually. So the biggest would be the Henlopen TID that was established here in 2020. So this was really our effort to work with Sussex County to identify the growth area of where we and do that land use analysis and the traffic analysis so that as development is coming online in this area that we have the transportation improvements to be able to support it. So there's over $300 million worth of planned improvements for the TID specifically. You'll see the amount of money that has been collected to date, but what also is of note is that many of these projects are already in our CTP. So $16 million has already been completed in construction with work that happened on the SR24 corridor. We have $51 million worth of projects that are currently in construction now within the Henlopen TID, $44 million that are currently in design, and another $44 million that are planned. So while we haven't collected a lot of money from the developers, there is projects that are planned and that are advancing. We have entered to date into 13 agreements with developers. We also collect that payment towards the kind of the end of the process when the building permit is issued. So, there is that process, but just rest assured that there are improvements that are happening and advancing throughout the TID. The next kind of area of focus for another future TID, we have been working with staff to identify the boundaries and working through kind of the land use forecasts from a county standpoint. And then once that is completed, we will begin the modeling from a traffic analysis. So we are a few months away, but we are definitely making progress on the next location for implementing a TID down here in Sussex.
How did you determine that boundary?
Working with the planning staff here.
Our planning staff, planning staff, the boundaries typically follow either kind of watersheds, parcel boundaries, and then again, looking at your comp plan, where the growth is anticipated to happen and creating kind of an area that bounds that.
Right. I mean, when I look at that map, I'm thinking everything east of there is kind of, horses out of the barn.
Correct.
But that's where the wave is going to be breaking. So mm-hmm. if we can get out in front of it, that would be good.
That's the plan. So more to come in front of council here in the coming months. So our coastal corridor study, we launched this in 2021. This is really to bring the community together to look at those east-west connections because we've seen, obviously, the increase in development traffic. We have Maryland increasing their capacity coming into Delaware. So looking at identifying some short and medium and long-term solutions, similar to what we did on the Five Points Working Group. So we have been meeting over the course of the last year and a half. We've done traffic modeling for future outlooks, looking at the comp plans, and the plan is to be going out to the public in May with some recommendations along these corridors. So more to come in the coming months on that.
The SR1 corridor capacity plan, so this was originally created in the 1990s for us to essentially look at the Route 1 corridor and to preserve capacity throughout, because we want to have access management along there to eliminate conflict points. And so the last update that we did was in 2007, so we've been undergoing this process over the last, I would say, year or so, doing different public outreach, meeting with both counties, local governments, because what we need to do is kind of the forecasted of what growth is going to look like. So it works with the future development that is anticipated through the county comp plans, for the local comp plans. We're looking at kind of from a traffic capacity standpoint, and identifying ways that we can, you know, accommodate future growth, but still preserving that access along Route 1 so that we have safe management there. So again, our partnership with Sussex County continues. The MOU that we have between us has been a great, another example of our great partnership. We were before you, I think last year, talking about the building permit tracker system that both of our staffs have created, which is just such a useful tool for the public to be able to see now exactly, you know, as development is coming online, what the status of the building permits are and the improvements that go along with that. We've you know, we're continuing kind of looking at that MOU and ways that we can strengthen it. So it was updated, 2020, but we are kind of looking at our DLDOT policy and making adjustments to that policy so that we can kind of streamline that inspection process, so that we can ensure that we're looking for this, that the safety aspects of when we're doing inspections for a development, that is kind of at the forefront. Substantially complete is language that is in the MOU. Substantially complete means something completely different on a DLDOT capital project versus a developer project. And so making some adjustments there on the interpretation of that, but at the forefront, making sure that when we're doing that initial inspection before the permits are issued, that we are doing that safety inspection, because that's ultimately we want the focus on, and making sure that there's safe access into the site before we can proceed. And then really, I mean, as you all know, we are, you know, we joke about having the orange construction barrel become the new state flower, because even we had a very mild winter, so we were allowed to continue with a lot of work, but there is even more work coming. So this is our, we have a 6-year capital program. We're in the 23 to 28 CTP right now. This gets updated every 2 years. So we work with your staff to prioritize the projects coming in from Sussex County. It goes into our prioritization process, and that ultimately becomes our 6-year plan. So right now, $4.45 billion will be spent over the next 6 years through the course of the 23-28 plan, $1.37 billion in Sussex County. So we look forward to continuing that partnership with you all, identifying projects from a prioritization standpoint to make sure that we are investing in our existing infrastructure, but then also planning for continual growth. This is the largest capital program that we have done in the history of the department. So this current fiscal year, we have a $610 million program. Next fiscal year, we are proposing a $624 million program. So just a ton of work that is happening throughout the state. So I'm going to shift gears here and let Shantae take over to give you some project highlights that are happening in Sussex.
I mean, thought that occurs, and this might be a rabbit trail, but a lot of this funding comes from the gasoline tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how have you hammered out where the funding comes from as you transition away from gasoline, if we go in that direction?
So that has to be part of the conversation. And, you know, we collect about $146 million annually mm-hmm. from motor fuel tax. So as we are transitioning and having increased number of electric or hybrid or, you know, alternative fuel vehicles, funding has to be part of that conversation.
Right.
Don't have the answers yet, but
does
it needs to be
plan in jeopardy
part of it.
From a funding perspective?
So I think there'll be a gradual incorporation of electric and hybrid vehicles into our overall fleet. Right now, about 2% of all registered vehicles in Delaware are all electric or hybrid, mm-hmm. so it's a very small population of vehicles. So it's something that we'll see kind of, I think, shift over time. But you still are going to have people with gasoline-powered vehicles for some time that will still be paying the motor fuel tax. But it does need to be part of the long-term conversation on how we're going to incorporate that from a funding standpoint into the Transportation Trust Fund.
But it's not been resolved at this point.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so project highlights. I have a bunch of corridor slides to go through, and I had a list of projects that I was asked to report on. So first up, before I go to the corridor maps, would be the Route 54 bridge replacement project. So we are planning to fully replace the Route 54 bridge on Lighthouse Road. We will reconstruct it in halves. So our plan is to leave a lane in each direction running, as well as a sidewalk on one side of the road, and work on it in halves to be able to kind of maintain that existing capacity. We expect to construct the north side in the fall of 24 through the spring of 25, and then flip to the south side the fall of 25 into the spring of 26, leaving everything in place during the summer and not having any traffic impact.
There's no chance of increasing capacity in that bottleneck, is there?
There is not. Not at this time. All right, so to the corridor slide. So first up is the Route 1 corridor. We have some work in construction now, as well as some planned efforts. So I'm going to start actually just a little bit off of Route 1 with New Road Bridge over Canary Creek. So the design is underway for that project. A big part of the project scheduling is the wetland mitigation. So we do have wetland mitigation required because of impacts that we have, and we are trying to finalize that. So that's really driving our schedule at this point. But we hope to have utility relocations underway this fall, and then have bridge construction begin the fall of 24. So more to come as we again work out those wetland mitigation issues. Switching gears to both SR1 minus Conaway, as well as SR1 and Cave Neck Road. So both grade separations that we're planning, right-of-way acquisition is underway for minus Conaway. We have been for a little while now. Cave Neck right-of-way acquisition should start this year, and they will be about a year off in terms of construction. So we'll start construction on minus Conaway in 24 and on Cave Neck in 2025. And then we have SR1 and 16, which is under construction now. We expect to complete it in 2025, and this is just a drone picture of what's been done to date. So the ramps to the east side of Route 1 have been completed, and we will be shifting traffic, Route 1 traffic, to those ramps. Similar, if you remember how we constructed the Little Heaven interchange up in Kent County, very similar, basically building the ramps to the outside, shifting traffic to those so that we can build rebuild Route 1 and the bridge structures. Next up is 113. We have several things to report on 113. I want to start off with some new traffic signals that are going to go in. All are under construction and anticipated to be complete by the summer. So we have one going in at Governor Stokely Road, Avenue of Honor, Daisy Street, the Mason-Dixon Shopping Center, as well as Hosier Street. So the reason for these, so in general, when you talk about corridor preservation, we tend to not want to put in traffic signals. Unfortunately, we have to at these locations. In some cases, we have grade separations proposed in the future, and we're just not there yet, ready to build those. But in the meantime, traffic volumes are picking up and crashes are picking up, and so we've got to address that, specifically at Avenue of Honor. We've got a large rebuild of the Sussex Central High School happening. You have the new Howard T. Ennis School there. There are a lot of students and parents going through those intersections. My daughter goes to Sussex Central now, and I have seen collisions, you know, at that entranceway with students, and so it was something that we just had to do. So I know folks don't love to have new traffic signals, but we feel like from a safety standpoint, it's what we need to do in the interim. Switching gears, we've got the 113 and 404 grade separation under design. We are acquiring right-of-way, doing a great job with that, working with all the different owners along the corridor. We expect to be in construction on that project in 2024. And then we also have the 113 and 9 grade separation, which has just begun design. So we'll be out to the public soon to talk about some of that work. And then we also have the 113 widening along basically through Millsboro, where we will be adding a third lane in each direction. So that project is also in design, and we'll be out to the public soon to show those different alternative. And then last but not least, this also ties into the 24 corridor, is the North Millsboro Bypass Project, the long-awaited project, especially for those who travel through Millsboro on a daily basis. We are finishing up right-of-way acquisition. We took a different approach with this project, similar to what we did on the Route 54 bridge that I talked about before. We brought a contractor in during the design phase to help us really work through a lot of those maintenance of traffic issues, constructability. For North Millsboro Bypass, it was really important because of the environmental permitting. We really needed to know exactly how the contractor was going to build it, what their exact impacts were, and so we had them on during the design process, which was really successful. So they've actually begun to do some tree clearing a couple of weeks ago because we had an environmental restriction that we were trying to beat, and so we were thankful to already have them on board, but we do expect to begin roadway construction in a few months and have that road open by the summer of 2025. And then there's the beloved 24 corridor. We like to call it the 24s because there's just so many bubbles on this map of all the work that we're doing on 24. As the Secretary mentioned, we completed the first phase of the widening on 24 from Route 1 to Mulberry Knoll Road. The second phase has just gotten underway with construction now, and it will be complete by the end of next year. Moving inland, we've got 24 at Camp Arrowhead and Angola intersection, and that project is underway as well, hope to be complete by the end of this calendar year for that construction. We had a project at Burton's Pond, so a bridge project. It's really a dam. And so that construction should be wrapping up by this summer. We did complete the improvements at 24 and Long Neck Road, widening and lengthening turn lanes, adding pedestrian improvements. We have 24 and Bay Farm, as well as Mount Joy intersections underway. That should be complete by the end of this year. So a lot of work in the 24 corridor. We also have the Plantation Road Phase 1 project that just begun construction, and we anticipate completion for that one towards the end of this year. Just have a few pictures. This is the Mount Joy intersection. So widened to, if you recall this intersection, it was a very narrow intersection before. It had very short turn lanes, or in some cases, no turn lanes at all. And so our contractor has been doing a great job getting that done under traffic and coordinating with all of the businesses. And then Camp Arrowhead also widened, again, adding turn lanes. And so what we see along these corridors is you don't always need to add another through lane. It's really the turning movements that really can gum up intersections. So having those turn lanes and having them adequate in length makes a huge difference, both from a capacity standpoint as well as safety.
At the Angola, like the next one west, when's that start?
It's one project. Camp Arrowhead and Angola is actually one project. Okay. So same contractor, same project. They're just focusing on Camp Arrowhead and then there. They'll flip.
Okay.
Correct.
How about that Blueberry Knoll to Route 9 concept? Is that in the pipeline still, or wasn't there some talk about you're going to put a light in there, Blueberry, right?
Mulberry. Okay, that's Mulberry. What I was like, Mulberry.
Blueberry's down.
Yes, yes. So Mulberry. So that project, that's the second phase of widening of Route 24. It's in construction now. We're working on the temporary signal. The design just got completed, and I believe it's supposed to be in the May June timeframe, right. And there will be short turn lanes, so hopefully we can really get people moving through that intersection.
Yeah, and then pushing from there up to Route 9, is that still a potential?
Mulberry Knoll extension is what you're talking about. Yeah. Yes, so that project is in the CTP. Right now it's in the out years of the CTP, and as we look at that project as well as Plantation Phase 2, right. We're trying to figure out kind of the timing of both of those and whether you do one before the other, but yes, that is contemplated in the CTP. All right, so the Route 9 corridor. I'll start with Kings Highway, which is number 11 on this chart. So we did our first public workshop in 2022. We did have a request from Delaware Greenways, the Byways Group, the business community, and residents to have a peer review of our proposed design. So it was based on the master plan with some minor tweaks, just to make sure that everything was in line, that there was good community feedback. And so we did take that extra step, so it took a little bit of time to do that, but the independent consultants review and recommendations are nearly complete, so in the next month or so we expect to have those, and then we will be back out to the public to hopefully finalize the design and move forward with actual design work, because that's what we really need to do to then be able to require right-of-way and ultimately build the improvement. We're also coordinating with a variety of different developers that are along the corridor to make sure that we have enough space to build our improvements, and that they're considering that as part of their project. Already talked about Plantation Road Phase 1, so switching all the way to the west, Park Avenue Phase 1 is under construction. I have some really good drone photos of that. We anticipate it to be complete by next summer.
Truth to the rumor, they're going to rename that Sam Wilson Boulevard?
Well, I might have had a request from someone, so there is an honorary naming process that can happen. We expect that the actual road name will it will either extend Aero Safety Road down to meet there, because there will still be a Park Avenue, a sliver of Park Avenue. So we'll work through that, but there is an honorary naming process associated with that. So this is the new Park Avenue to the left. You can see existing Park Avenue to the right, so that's really where it comes back in to existing alignment. This is at the Park Avenue Bedford Street intersection, so you can see the grading that has happened there. And then at 113 and Park Avenue, where the new tie-in is, new signal, mast arms, new acceleration lane that's been graded out. So a lot of work, and again, coordinating with proposed development in the area to ensure that their improvements are in line with what we're doing to make sure it all works together really well. And last but not least, our favorite, the FAST project that you all helped us with, so Funding Accelerating Safety and Transportation. And so this is the Cave Neck Hudson Sweetbriar intersection. We are under design for it. As you know, we were able to move this project forward from a scheduling time frame with your help, with you kind of fronting the money, and then we will begin paying you back when it was scheduled in the CTP. Things are going well. We expect to be in right-of-way acquisition in the next few months. We have been working with some of the property owners where we do have total acquisitions, just to be working with them in advance, because that process can take a long time. But we anticipate being in construction in fiscal year 25. And that's all of them.
I feel like that was record time.
Thank you for your presentation. You know, a lot of times we hear about, you know, anti-DelDOT stuff. I know it's hard to believe.
I know.
And anti-county council stuff, too. That's okay. But I think if the public looks at this, they'll realize there's an awful lot of work being done in Sussex County.
Sure is.
Certainly, as we've had conversations before, we can't change what didn't happen 5 years ago.
Right.
All we do is move forward and look down that path. And I think what we see, hopefully, is what the public wants. What the public needs, the traveling public for sure. And you are doing a good job. We certainly appreciate the effort of working together with you. We appreciate the partnership. And it's exciting. I mean, you know, there's gonna be traffic cones. That's gonna be whatever.
There
you know.
Is.
So there's gonna be traffic cones.
Yes. Thank
any
you,
sir. Any council questions, comments? Anybody upset?
Very good.
Everybody's good?
Really good.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And enjoy
always
the rest of your day.
Seeing you all.
Thank you.
Thank
enjoy
you very
the rest
much.
Of your day.
See you.
Mr. Lawson, do yours real quick. Just do yours.
Okay. County Administrator's report for March 28, 2023. Item 1, a reminder, Council will not meet on Tuesday, April 4th or Tuesday, April 11th. In addition, county offices will be closed on Friday, April 7th to observe Good Friday holiday. The next regularly scheduled council meeting will be held on Tuesday, April 18th at 10 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We're going to move to our 10:15 public hearing. Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Now it's time and place for public for a public hearing on ordinance amending the annual operating budget. And Ms. Jennings will give us our, is it Ms. Jennings?
It's fine.
Give us a short presentation. After that presentation, if council has any questions, they may ask those at that time. Then subsequent to that, if there's any member of the public that would like to speak, they may do so by coming forward and giving their name, address, and speaking, and then we'll also reach out to those who are listening remotely. Ms. Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. So, Mr. Poff is about to open up his kitchen incubator, and in order to do that, we do have to amend the budget, which includes all the fees. So Mr. Poff is here, and he will give you just a brief summary of what those fees are.
Good morning, members of the council.
Morning, sir.
We're almost there with the kitchen incubator. Today we hope to establish the fees necessary for operating the kitchen incubator. There is an application fee of $100, a security deposit of $300. You have the choice of becoming a monthly member of the Kitchen Incubator, which will give you 15 hours for $300, and any additional hours used beyond that 15 hours would be $24 per hour. If you choose to do an hourly rate and not take the monthly offering, it's $35 per hour with a minimum of 3 hours operation. Because we feel from the time you get in, get set up, cleaned up, get out of there, we feel it's a 3 hour operation. We're also offering storage. So we have dry storage, which is cages. They're locked. You supply your own lock. That you can rent for $75 a month. We have small refrigeration storage, which is $45 a month. And if you need a large refrigeration area, that's $75 per month per shelf.
Okay.
That's the balance of the fees.
Any questions from council? If not, thank you, Mr. Poff. Is there any member of the public that would like to come forward and address this issue? Is there any member of the public that would like to come forward and address this? Seeing none. Operator, can you check online to see if there's anyone listening remotely that would like to opine on this matter?
At this time, there's currently no one.
Thank you, Operator. Mr. President, at this time we can close the public hearing on this matter. If council desires, close public record.
We'll close public hearing. So okay with council, close public record. Ask, I guess, Mr. Jennings, to read the short paper.
Sure, can I? An ordinance amending the annual operating budget for fiscal year 2023 to incorporate new fees and expenses for the Kitchen Incubator Project.
Pleasure, Council.
Move for adoption.
Motion, Mr. Hudson. Second.
Second.
Mr. Riley. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Green.
You just need
a
yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
I vote yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, Mr. Poff. I guess next time we see you have some breakfast sandwiches or something.
Okay. Ice cream.
Just checking. Ms. Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. I'm going to give you an update on the American Rescue Plan Act. I do have members in the audience here that I do want to thank for all their help to get to this point. We did roll it out a year ago, and the Community Development Housing Program has been very successful, and we're going to talk about that. So we have Brandy Nauman, Mike Jones, and Taisha DuPont Palmer, and I have Lori Webb there as well. She's my grant expert in the finance department. So just quick timeline. 2021 is when we had got announcement that we were going to get the $45 million. We received the first half in 2021. It did take some time before the Treasury actually released their final guidance. Gave a couple months to review that. I made a presentation March of last year on recommendations. We received the second part in 22. We awarded grant funds last year. So you can see that the projects have been underway for about, I think it's at 7-8 months now. And now I want to give you an annual update where we are. So last year, we had set some guidelines on how we were going to spend the money. We needed to make sure they met ARPA requirements. All the projects must be completed or under contract by December 31st, 2024. We didn't want to grow government, so we knew that these funds were temporary. So we wanted to put it in funds that we knew that we didn't have to try to sustain going forward. We wanted to align them with council priorities such as affordable housing and adequate infrastructure. And we, of course, did not want to duplicate any efforts that other governments might be doing using their ARPA funds. So if you remember, we did allocate our funds. Most of it went to sewer infrastructure. We did put funds, $8.3 million, into affordable housing. We had a non-profit grant program. We had security upgrades for our sewer infrastructure. We did add 4 employees to EOC and 4 employees to the paramedic department. And then, as Mr. Poff just talked about, we did add funds to the kitchen incubator to get that up and running. So the nonprofit grant program that we rolled out last year was for very large projects. They were $500,000. You had to be able to demonstrate a need and that you were helping with COVID efforts. And if you remember, these were the companies, the businesses that were awarded. Again, it was a minimum of $500,000. You saw that previously last year and made a vote to award these funds. Moving on to housing, this is how we divided the housing low income programs up. We had a direct buyer assistance program of $300,000. That was that down payment settlement up to $30,000. You had to earn 65% AMI or less, and that is an ARPA requirement. We had the development loan fund. Again, we awarded part of the money last year. We're going to reopen the grant application again this year to redistribute those funds again. And organizations that applied last year, such as Sussex County Habitat for Humanity, they can apply again this year. It's the same stipulation, the same grant application, where they can get up to $500,000 or $50,000 per affordable unit. And then we had rehab funds, which was $500,000 for rehab, and then we had $1.5 million for other assistance, such as Clean Hands, so that we could get to some of those residents we couldn't touch before because of Clean Hands, so that we could rehab those houses. And some of the successes, again, I want to go back, thank Brandy's group. We've been very successful with ARPA and affordable housing. So as I said, we did fund $300,000 for direct buyer assistance. This helped with 10 settlements with the $30,000. And you can see it's really helped the female head of households, the elderly, the disabled, the ones that really need to be able to have that down payer assistance. Another portion that's been successful is the rehab program. Again, the family must make 75% AMI or less. They involved emergency repairs, roofing, and weatherization. We had 49 projects completed since we rolled this out the March last year. 5 projects are currently under construction, and there's still 17 applications in process to date. So to give you a financial update, the first column here is where the original allocation was when we talked about it last year. Wastewater infrastructure, the $25 million. Nonprofit grants, the 5.2. You can see that listed there. The next column is what we've spent to date. And again, a lot of these projects are going to take some time. So we'll, with the wastewater infrastructure, there's permitting that needs to be involved. Permits haven't been approved yet. So they're slow to be moving. We still expect to spend the $25 million without a problem. So that's the third column. The fourth column is looking at it, what we've approved last year, how can we repurpose the funds? We do have to spend this money by the end of 2024. So it's important that we stay on top of this and possibly reallocate these funds if we can to get them out the door. So nonprofit grants has a small $175,000. The low income assistance relief program, again, this was to help with the Clean Hands to get to people to use for rehabs. We do not need as much money as we thought. We really need it in the rehab program itself. So there's an extra $1.2 million. The kitchen incubator, because we're partnering with Dell Tech, a lot of that equipment was already there. So we didn't need as much money as that we were thinking we were going to. So there's an extra $200,000 there. Public safety employees, it's costing us a little bit more because of COLA last year. So there was an increase in salaries. And then we had some contingency money that now we can reallocate, knowing where all these projects are going to go.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure. Go back.
Might have lost you there for a second, but The asterisk next to the $6 million low-income buyer assistance.
Yes.
Why? Or low-income housing grant, sorry.
Good
Why
question.
Is that asterisk?
Yes, good question. So this was the program for the nonprofits where we only rolled out half of the money. So this will be rolled out the second half. So we're at $0 right now. It's because we haven't, and you haven't, awarded the second portion of that. So I wanted to asterisk that today.
So we're going to talk about that.
We're getting, sorry. No. I had it asterisked there to remind me. Okay. I need to tell you that this next phase is coming up for this one. Okay. It's not reallocation of money, it's just a second application period.
Okay.
So I took the last column where we could repurpose funds, and I have a recommendation for council. So I'd like to have a new nonprofit grant program, add another $1 million to our nonprofit grants for the small nonprofits that we were not able to get to in the first round, because we did the large $500,000. So this would hit the smaller ones. Add additional money to the rehab program. Again, the money we went through, it was $500,000 the first round. Since we have about 2 years left in this program, allocate another $1 million, since we know we could spend the half. The low income buyer assistance, again, we had $300,000 the first round. Since we have 2 years left, I would recommend putting $600,000 in that program. Where I'm getting that money is the assistance relief program, which was already sent for the low income. It was just used to help pay down for the clean hands. So I'm just kind of reallocating it for the same purpose. Again, kitchen incubator, reallocate that, move that to nonprofit grants, need some more money for public safety, and then move some money out of contingency to help fund those. So let me get into, the newest part is the nonprofit small grant program. And again, ARPA is very specific on what we can do. We can only fund 501c3s or 501c19s, which are veteran programs. The nonprofit must, for this program, must provide a service in Sussex and have a physical location in Sussex. And when you fill out the application, you do say, okay, there was a need because of COVID. Well, as a financial person, I also want the numbers as well to see that there was a need. So my recommendation would be a very financial look at what the nonprofits have done, and look at their 990s that have to be submitted to the IRS. Look at their 2019, or 2020 and 2021. 2019 would be their base year, and I would compare their base year with the COVID years of 2020 and 21. So if you could see that their revenue has gone down, and they say, yes, this was due to COVID, we would do that calculation and give them up to $40,000 based off that calculation.
So there's just a presumption that it was due to COVID, I guess.
They will have to sign the grant. It was due to COVID, but instead of me just accepting that word, I want to also financially say, yes, it was due to COVID. And the other thing, by looking at 2020 and 2021, there were other CARES Act funding things out there that could have already paid for that, and this is my another check to make sure it hadn't already been covered by something else.
Right.
So, and then the other thing is ARPA does allow you to look at expenses if there's a growth in expenses as well. So what I would do is do another analysis looking at line 18 on 990, but then subtract out any revenue gains, because again, there are some CARES Act funding. You could have gotten expenses, extra PPE expenses, but they would have been reimbursed by other grants.
Right.
So doing this calculation also checks to make sure that everything's being met by ARPA guidelines. So again, it would be up to $40,000. And again, going back, it's a 501c3, so this could be any ambulance company, fire company, any nonprofit that is classified as a 501c3.
Would you give any preference to certain entities versus others? I mean, an ambulance company, for example? Or?
No, and it is all based off of, I'm not going to weight one organization over another. Each nonprofit could have its own. Now, I could probably say a lot of the fire companies have gotten a lot of the CARES Act money and things like that, so they might not be the ones that need it as much as others. But this is just a flat financial, no other subjectivity involved, unless council would like so, but that was not my plan.
So you're probably getting to this, but so there's got to be a way to make a determination who's awarded the grant.
Correct. So yeah, it's the third bullet here. So I am budgeting the $1,175,000. So say I have 100 applicants and someone reach at $40,000. What I would do is then take a percentage of what I've gone over budget and take that percentage and go straight down the line, and you get a percentage of that if I happen to go over budget. So I don't want to, I'm not going to say, you understand, it's
whoever had
all
the biggest deficit basically would be given priority. essentially?
So any, correct. So if you meet that $40,000 mark, you're capped at $40,000, but say I'm over budget already at 20%, you're going to be discounted 20%. But somebody else that was discounted and only had a $1,000 loss, they're going to be discounted 20% as well. So they're going to get less money, just like the $40,000 is, by the same percentage. Now, that's if I have the need. I don't know what kind of need I'm having. That's why I have to do it this way.
Right.
Now, you always have the opportunity. We can come back in a year, and I do plan on going back in a year to say we have some more funds we can maybe reallocate, and this is another program you want to fund again, and we saw that there was a need. These grants will all come before you to be voted on anyway.
Right.
So I can have the full analysis, and you're like, okay, Gina, I don't like what you did. Can we look at it this way? But this is my plan.
Driven.
It's all numbers driven. No subjectivity at all.
Yeah.
That's how I like it.
Sorry,
that's how I like it. Keep talking away. So applications could be accepted online April 3rd. That's the website. It will be right on our ARPA page, also in the carousel. Deadline would be May 1st, so that way I do have a cutoff and I can do that analysis to see where everybody stands. Again, this will all be all reviewed, make sure I don't go over budget. The next steps would be, if you're okay with what I'm proposing, I will open up the process for the program. I then come back. My plan would be to come back before you in May for an actual vote on how the calculation worked out. So none of this will come out until you voted on it. And then, here's the asterisk part. The second grant application for housing development grant, where we awarded $6 million, we sent out $3 million last time. We some organizations have not been able to fulfill that need. We're going to reallocate that to this year's. So we would like to reopen that grant application at the same time we do the small, so that'd be April 3rd. The plan for that, that application is a lot more complicated. We would come back before council in June for you to award those nonprofit or for-profit grants, because they're for affordable housing. So that's my update. If you have any questions, I'll take them at this time. There's no vote needed. As I said, I'll be coming back before you for a vote at a later time.
Any questions of council? Another fine job, Mr. Jenner.
Absolutely.
Another fine job.
Thank you.
I'm shocked it's going to be numbers driven. It's amazing.
Sorry.
Thank you,
it's
ma'am.
Boring. Yes.
No, thank you.
Very good.
Mr. Ashman, come on down.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
I'm here this morning to ask for permission to prepare and post notices for a public hearing, and this would be for the Forest Landing expansion. This would be in the Ellendale area. The engineering department received a request from Davis, Bowen, and Friedel Incorporated on behalf of their clients, OA Forest Landing LLC. They are the owners and developers of parcel 230-19-112 and 230-20-12 along North Old State Road. The parcels have been annexed into the town of Ellendale, and where Sussex County provides a sanitary sewer service for the town, we are required to annex them into our boundary as well. The parcels are located in a tier 3 area for sewer service, but with the annexation into the town, Sussex County is the best option for their service, and the project would be responsible for system connection charges of $6,600 per EDU based on current rates, if so approved.
We have a motion.
I do have to make a motion. Be it moved by Sussex County Council that the Sussex County Engineering Department is authorized to prepare and post notices for the Forest Landing expansion of the Sussex County Unified Sanitary Sewer District to include parcels 230-19-112.00 and 230-20-12.00 as presented on March 28th, 2023.
Pleasure, Council.
Motion to approve.
Motion, Mrs. Green. Second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I have the motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Jennings, grant requests.
Okay, the first grant request is Nanticoke Senior Center. They're requesting $7,948 for their sound system. The last Councilmatic grant received for this organization was $3,000 for their fire suppression system by Mr. Vincent. Mr. Vincent placed on the agenda.
Somebody make a motion to grant $2,500 from my council district from one Councilmatic account. I'd appreciate it.
I will make a motion to spend your money.
I think you would. Motion, Mr. Riley, second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson, to grant $2,500 to the Nanticoke Senior Center for a new sound system from District 1 Councilmatic account. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will, yes. Motion carried.
Okay, the next one, HOB Elementary School. The elementary school team is requesting $1,000 for the Robotics World Championship. Last grant received for this event was $1,500 from Ms. Green, and Ms. Green placed on the agenda.
Mrs. Green.
Yes, I will grant them the $1,000 they are requesting.
Motion, Mrs. Green, second.
Second.
Mr. Riley, to grant $1,000 from District 2 Council MAG account to the HOB Brigham Elementary School for the Robotics World Championship. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will, yes. Motion carried. Next.
Okay, the next one is the HOB Elementary School for their middle school team. They're requesting $1,500 for the VEX IQ Elementary Robotics Challenge World Championship. Last grant received for this event was $1,500 from Ms. Green, and Ms. Green placed on the agenda.
Mr. Green.
So I will donate the $1,500 they are requesting.
Motion, Mrs. Green. Second.
Second.
Mr. Riley, to grant $1,500 from District 2 Council MAC account to HOB Brigham Middle School for their Robotics World Championship. Questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will, yes. Motion carried. Next.
Okay, the next one is Cape and Lopin Senior Center is requesting $1,800 for the Rehoboth Concert Band fundraiser. Last grant received for this event was $2,000, which was $1,000 for Mr. Schaefer, $500 for Mr. Hudson, and $500 for Mr. Riley. Mr. Schaefer placed on the agenda.
I know Mr. Schaefer will then donate $1,000 from District 3 Council Bank account. Anybody else want to donate or go? We'll do it.
I'll do $500.
Okay, so motion, Mr. Hudson.
Sure.
Second, Mr. Riley, to grant $2,000 to the Cape Elizabeth Senior Center for the Rehoboth Concert Band fundraiser, being $1,000 from District 3 Council Bank account, $500 from District 4 Council Bank account, and $500 from District 5 Council Bank account. Question on the motion? Take a vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I believe, yes. Motion carried. Next.
Okay, and the last one is Fraternal Order of Police, Sussex County Lodge Number 2. They're requesting $3,000 for their charity supported by the FOP Lodge Number 2 program. Last grant received for this event was in the amount of $2,000, which was Mr. Schaefer $1,000, Mr. Hudson gave $500, Mr. Riley gave $500, Mr. Schaefer placed on the agenda.
And Mr. Hudson, you want to make a motion?
I would make that motion for $1,000 from
Mr. Schaefer's account. Schaefer's
from
District
3 account,
bank account.
And I would do $500 from my account.
And I'll do $500.
Okay, so motion, Mr. Hudson, second, Mr. Riley, to grant $2,000 to the Fraternal Order of Police, Sussex County Lodge Number 2, for their charity supported by the FOP Lodge 2 program, being $1,000 from District 3 Council Bank account, $500 District 4 Council Bank account, and $500 District 5 Council Bank account. Question on the motion? Take the vote, Mr. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will, yes. Motion carried. Introduction proposed any ordinance, Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. The first one's in Mr. Riley's district, an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural district to a LI1 limited industrial district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Georgetown 100, Sussex County, containing 14.426 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
Riley introduces it.
Next one is in Mr. Vincent's district, an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to a C3 heavy commercial district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Little Creek 100, Sussex County, containing 5.219 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
And the last one is in Mr. Vincent's district as well, an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in a GR general residential district for a solar farm on a 23.357 acre portion, more or less, of a certain parcel of land lying and being in Little Creek 100, Sussex County, containing 53.891 acres, more or less.
I'll introduce it.
That is all, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Council member comments. Council member comments. Okay, I intend a motion to go to executive session for land acquisition.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Riley, second.
Second.
Mr. Hudson. Questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Green.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
I will, yeah. Now, executive session for land acquisition, I assume, Mr. Lawson.